Good afternoon, everybody. It's Michael Ball coming to you live from Harvard Studio 620 at Mosaic Stadium as this week in the CFL wraps up with a doubleheader. And this game tonight between the Alouettes and your Saskatchewan Rough Riders concludes the week's action. The Riders will look to get back in the win column after last week's debacle in Winnipeg, snap their string of six consecutive victories. The Alouettes are winners of three straight, with their most recent loss coming in week nine against these same Rough Riders. Montreal is 3-2 as the visiting team this season. In fact, they've won three in a row on the road. The Rough Riders looking for their fifth consecutive win here at Mosaic Stadium, which would be their longest home winning streak since 2010. So something has to give tonight in Rider Nation. Coming up on Countdown to Kickoff, we'll hear from our regular unrivaled panel of experts, including Brendan Tamman, Darian Durant, Jason Claremont, and Luke Molitor. We'll also be joined by Jeff Fairholm as we celebrate the 30th anniversary of the 1989 team and outstanding former running back and Plaza of Honor inductee in 2017, Wes Cates, makes his Countdown to Kickoff debut as my co-host. That and much, much more coming up. This is Countdown to Kickoff from Harvard Studio 620 at Mosaic Stadium on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. And we are back here at Harvard Studio 620. Ballsy along with former Rider great Wes Cates. And we're breaking this one down in our 2 hours of the pregame show. It's the Riders and the Montreal Alouettes as we see from Calgary, the Hamilton Tiger Cats and Calgary Stampeders meeting for the second time this season. Of course, Calgary had a 14-game winning streak against Hamilton snap the last time those teams met at Tim Hortons Field in the Steel City. This is going to be an interesting game, Wes Cates. Talk from a player's perspective. It's a little harder, isn't it, to get up for an Eastern Division team? I know you're a pro. I know you get paid. You got to play. You're coming off a humiliating game, so that should help the Riders out. But it's tough getting up for an Eastern Division team. It even is for the fans because you only get to see them once. There's no real geographical rivalry or anything like that.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Ballsy.
Absolutely,
first of all. Yeah. Should be fun. Let's have fun, right?
Yeah, that's right.
it's a bit harder to get up for those games just because there's not as much of an impact on your playoff berth. But every game's important, right?
Yeah.
It could be the difference in you getting in with your overall record. But I think at least when I played, there was a bit of a rivalry Saskatchewan and Montreal, right?
Yeah.
We played in so many great games. So you kind of try to find that as a player, that thing that's going to get you up for the game, whether it be a individual matchup with a guy that you think is good out there or that you've had some, bad blood with or whatever the case may be, or just the game in general, just thinking about your overall record as a player against them and just trying to go out and get yourself up to make big plays.
Wes, when you had a game like that, first of all, do you remember too many games like that last week where nothing seems to go right and you get smoked? Does any stick out in your mind? And when something like that happens to you, can you just flush it? Do you just put it away? You don't want to even look at it? Or do you want to look at the tape and still go through the pain of it again?
Yeah, well, I do remember pretty much all of 2011. That was
No, but
when you're having success and then you have a game like that, as a coach, you definitely want to take a few points and get on the team about it because you want guys to know that they need to get better and that's not acceptable. But sometimes you don't look at the whole tape or you just, you pull out a few bright spots and a few bad spots, go over that, and then you just get back to work. So I think, it kind of depends on your coach and what they want to do. But a lot of times when you're in a game like that and you know everybody just didn't come to play or give their best, you just scrap film that next day and just get back to work.
So should Rider Nation as a fan base be concerned, or you as a former player, did you see anything in that game where you're concerned, or is it the case where you play 18 regular season games, you're going to have a clunker one or two times? Everybody has a bad day at an office. I have my tongue twisted up two or three times, and I'm in the communications business. So is it one of those things where it's a bad day at the office, let's flush it and move on?
You hope it is that, right? I think as long as you only have one game like that, you don't really worry about it. That's what you call it. But when you start stringing them together, so this is a big, bounce back game. They need to come out, be ready to play, show and prove, get off to a good start, move the ball, get a couple stops, all that good stuff. So I think it's definitely can teeter on the side of being, a habitual thing.
Yeah.
So I think you got to do whatever you can to make that next game out or your next showing a good one.
Let me ask you here, and I'll get Nevin, if you can get Brendan ready for us. We'll go to that in a couple seconds here. Nevin Chamonix, our operator back at the studio here, as we're going to hook up with Brendan Tamman in a minute on the from the boardroom feature. When you look at this football team coming in here, the Montreal Alouettes, well, first off, your thoughts on how that last game ended. In the third quarter, with 3.5 minutes to go, they pull the pin, the Riders win. What did you think of that whole scenario?
Those are the rules, really. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're on the losing end of it, you're going to be mad and wish that wasn't the rules. You're on the winning end of it, you're like, hey, that kind of gave us an easy win, right? So I think it's something that you complain to the league about if you were on the losing end of it and see if you can't get the rule changed. But everybody knew going into it what the rules of the league were. It wasn't like they just came up with it on the fly and just said, I think we're going to end this one, right? So you just take it as what it is and you move on for it. I don't think Montreal should feel really bad about that, and I don't think Saskatchewan should be too excited about it. Just thankful that they got the points.
Let me ask you a question. If you could be a revisionist and go back in history, because I'm going to ask Brendan Tamman this, would you trade Vernon Adams Jr. for Charleston Hughes? That was the trade eventually. If you could do it again, would you do that? Because Vernon Adams Jr. appears to have a longer upside than Charleston Hughes, just based on age and wear and tear.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's still yet to be seen, right? We can't really ground Vernon Adams. I am impressed with the way he's come out with his opportunities this year and make good of them. But, you know, Charleston's been doing his thing, and when he's healthy and out there, he does it week in and week out. So we've seen a little snippet of Vernon, you know, just a personal level. You hope it continues, but I'm not necessarily ready to jump on that train just yet.
So Charleston Hughes will not play today. That's one of the lineup changes. He's banged up. He didn't practice much. He's not playing today, but what we're hearing is he's just banged up, and they're letting him rest. Do you like that strategy? Because you want him fresh down the backstretch. I think his play I don't want to say it, Wayne, but he wasn't as fiery as he was last season early on, and we're starting to see shades of that now a little bit because this guy's 35. Father Time is undefeated, right? Yeah. And he takes a lot of he has a lot of presence on that defensive line.
No, I think definitely as management, anytime you can give a guy a rest that you know you're going to need down the stretch and put some young guys in there, let them get some work, and it's not necessarily going to affect your standings if you lose, right? They're sitting in a good spot right now, so maybe it is a good time to shut him down, get him some rest so that he's ready to roll when it's really going to count and when the money's really on the line, right? I like the idea of getting young guys reps, and if the old guys aren't chasing records or chasing, you know what I mean, bonuses, then they'll usually be happy to take a seat, right? So I think that's the case, right? If it's not, I would never take a personal athlete that wants to be on the field off and say, no, if he says he wants to play, let him play, but if he's happy with resting and getting a break, then surely do that any time of the season.
Time now to head out on the Mr. Lube hotline. It's our hotline brought to you by Mr. Lube. Get fast, warranty-approved, top-to-bottom maintenance at any of the four Mr. Lube Regina locations. Our very popular segment with former Rider and Blue Bomber GM Brendan Tamman. It's From the Boardroom. All right, time to head out on the Mr. Lube hotline and speak to BT. How are you today, my friend?
Good, Ballsy. How are you?
Good. You're joined with Wes Cates here, too. So, Wes, you could jump in whenever you want. You two know each other well.
Sure.
Yeah. Brendan, let's talk about this. We've got a running back sitting here right to my left, and I'll get Wes's opinion on this, too. The Rough Riders, William Powell, 4 carries for 1 yard. Now, I know a lot of it has to do in how the defense is dictating what you're going to do, and the Bombers are very physical and have controlled the line of scrimmage the last 2 games against the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. But I think if this offense is going to be successful, and it's proven it, William Powell has to be more of a difference maker. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have a back like him, to use him 4 times is a bit mind-boggling to me, but I think you need to get him the ball at least 15 times a game in order for your team to be successful. And like I say, he's so good. I want him to get him the ball at least. And, you know, they always target point is 20 carries. That might be, you know, depending on a game how it goes, it might be tough. But 15 at least, I would think, is a target area.
Wes, where do you see that in terms of his production? Because I don't see Fajardo. I'm not saying he can't, but he's not set up to throw for 400 yards a game. You don't want him gunslinging it all over the field.
No, I think I'm on the same lines as Brendan here. you know, you want the running back to get about 15 touches, and not just for the running back, for the O-line too. I think a lot of times people forget that if an O-lineman is sitting back in pass pro getting run over by D-lineman, it's kind of hard to stay focused and be in the game. You kind of start to feel like a punching bag, right?
Yeah.
You get the running game going, they can tee off on the D-line, maybe, you know, slow them down a bit, rough them up a bit before they have to get punched in the mouth as as the rush comes, right? So
yeah.
Even when you're down, you know, you got to stick to the run. And me being a running back, they kind of felt that a bit playing from behind my last couple of years, right?
Yeah.
I always think it would have been better off if we'd have just stuck to the run and not tried to, you know, get it all back with passing plays. Just stick to your offense.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, Brendan, we talked about Charleston Hughes not playing today. Just your thought from a management perspective. He's obviously a bit nicked up. And as Wes said, if you're not taking money off out of his mouth or food off his table in terms of bonuses, I think this might bode well for the Riders down the backstretch, because they go into a bye week, so they get an extra week for him. So he has basically 2 weeks off the heel and be good for a playoff run. Because let's face it, unless the bottom falls out on his football team, they're going to play in the playoffs, either in the West or the East. So you want Charleston Hughes to be a difference maker.
Yeah, I mean, no question. I think, you know, there's no secret here. They're still fighting for first and or second in Winnipeg and Calgary. So I'm not sure I'd be, you know, I'm sure he's hurt, obviously, because I don't think they'd be resting him if he wasn't. So
right.
He's a pretty big part of what they do defensively. And I don't think you want to have any kind of mentality creeping in where, well, if this game doesn't mean much today, you know, we can still be okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Calgary and Winnipeg ain't going to lose many more games. So if you want second or first, you got to keep winning. So I presume he's hurt, and they need him to get him some rest, which is fine. That makes total sense. But to rest him, just to rest him, wouldn't make it.
Hey, Brendan, hindsight being 2020, you know, Riders traded Vernon Adams Jr. for Charleston Hughes. We know what Hughes is doing, leading the league in sacks again. It seems like that's just a reserve spot for him. If you were the GM, would you make that trade again with Vernon Adams Jr.? Looking like he's kind of getting it now. I see a lot of young Darian Durant in Vernon Adams Jr. If you were to make that trade again, if you were the GM, would you make that kind of trade?
Yeah, I would have made it. I mean, it's a win-now business. I don't care what anybody says. You know, you don't have 3 or 4 years to wait for a guy to come around. You're not going to be there to see it. So based on what we knew, or they knew at the time about Adams, and based on what Charleston Hughes was and still is, yeah, I would be here.
Brendan, would you be concerned if you're the general manager about how your offensive line has been owned the last couple of weeks? They've given up five sacks in the last two weeks, like five each week, so 10 sacks in the last 2 weeks to a very good Blue Bombers team, but this Montreal defense is no pushover either.
No, I think you've got to give one thing a lot of credit when it comes to that, too. I think Saskatchewan is pretty darn good still. I think, you know, they had a couple of tough weeks where they're playing probably one of the best, if not the best, linemen in the league in Jefferson. So, no, I wouldn't be worried. I think they've proven throughout the course of the year that they're still a good old line and they've run the ball. And they pass pro very well. So, I wouldn't be worried.
Yeah, Nevin, if you could just tell Brendan, we're going to try to hang up on you and call you back to get a solid, a bit better line. Sorry, it's kind of breaking up right now. So we're just going to Wes and I will talk, and maybe you could find just a better sell spot, because we really like talking football with you. Let me ask you,
sure.
The part and parcel, we talked about the running back. You said they're always back in pass pro.
Right.
I think that speaks to what you were saying, because this team has given up 10 sacks in the last 2 weeks.
Right.
By and large, I've been really happy with the O-line. They've gone without Phillip Blake and Brendan Labatt the whole season, basically. So they've done a great job. They got some young guys learning the ropes in Darius Bladick, who we'll hear from in our profiles feature. And, of course, I think Shepley's been getting better week in and week out, but he's still a young guy. Your thoughts on the O-line play the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think like we were discussing, I think a little bit does have to do with the inconsistency and just having to get back into pass pro a little more with the way these games have been going and playing from behind. But you still got to understand, I saw him miss some easy stunts and stuff like that, and maybe that's just, you know what I mean, communication amongst them. Maybe they know what they're supposed to do, but sometimes a different look can change a call, and if one guy wants to do one call, another guy thinks it should be another, but they're not speaking.
Yeah.
Then you get mix-ups like that. So they got to clean that up. I think always communication can get better. And then just let them fire off the ball and beat up on these D-linemen a little bit, right?
Yeah.
I'll always be an advocate of that, you know. And I think anybody who runs the ball as a running back or is a blocker, you know, O-lineman is going to agree with you. You want to get off the ball a little bit before you got to catch D-linemen and linebackers blitzing the whole game.
I had to snicker, too, before we get to Brendan. I had to snicker, like, Willie Jefferson comes through and sacks Kolaros clean, and the fumble goes out. I'm like, if there's one guy you need to block, it's number five, and he's inside. Like, how does he get so free?
I was saying that, like, right after it happened. I'm like, of all the people, you know what I mean? He just does a simple stunt inside, and it's like, okay, whatever happens, we need to squeeze down to him, screw who is ever coming off the edge.
Yeah.
They do the complete opposite, and then basically you're driving down to maybe get a field goal, make it a two-score game.
Yeah.
Now you turn around and you're down 28-3 going into half, and the game's pretty much over. So that was a huge play, and it was something that never should happen with arguably, you know, the best pass rusher in the league. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Okay, let's try it again on the Mr. Lube hotline and say hi to Brendan Tammond. We got you in a better spot now, man?
Yeah, I don't think it was too bad. Actually, it must have been just that people didn't want to hear me anymore.
Oh, no. I have a lot of good feedback. Are you watching that game, Brendan, what I just asked Wes, and you see Willie Jefferson come free and smoke your quarterback? If there's anybody to block, it's got to be number five.
Yeah, you should know where he is most of the time. He's too good not to. So, you know, they had a slip up there, but, you know, they haven't had a lot of those during the year. So I still think they'll be fine up front. But, yeah, you don't want to have that happen too often.
You know, as I asked Wes to start the game or the broadcast this question, Brendan, as a guy who's is helpless, he's on the sidelines, he can't do anything. These were always the games that I was concerned about. If I'm in the organization as a fan, as a broadcaster, I'm like, gee, I don't have a great feeling about this game. It's almost like you're sleeping on the Owls. They're playing good football. It's hard to manufacture that intensity, even amongst the fans, because it's not a national natural rival, geographical rival. You know, what did you think about games like this?
Yeah, I don't disagree with what you're saying, Ballsy. I think this is a little bit of a good thing in a weird way is that they lost Banjo Bowl. So they're going to come into this game with a little bit of urgency, I would hope, and then they go on their bye week. So this is their last chance to win a game in the last 3 weeks. So I think that'll help them a lot. But you're right. I think, you know, it's not a natural rivalry. It's not a Western team. They're a very good team. You know, they're a very under-the-radar team, which is scary too. So you got to be ready to play. And I think they will be. But you're right. It's a scary game. It won't be easy, that's for sure.
I'll tell you what, though, Wes. We talked about this, and Brennan can get a comment here too. I think Kahari Jones should be coach of the year. He takes over a dumpster fire. Like, Cavis Reed is gone. He's messed that team up. And then Mike Sherman, remember him last year, couldn't pull a headset out of his shirt after they won. He leaves, gets fired, and this guy has to take over. And they are on a roll, and it is 6-4, 3 wins in a row. I think this guy's coach of the year right now. If the season ended today, he's my vote for coach of the year.
I hear you. Well, I think this game today has a lot to do with it. I mean, you could argue the same points about Craig. You know, Dickey's been, you know, has had a great season when you look at what the Riders had going on for a few years here, right?
Yeah.
So, let's see what happens this game. But definitely, Kahari's up there. Whoever wins this game gets my vote for now.
Yeah. Are you surprised that Kahari Jones has been this good, Brendan?
No. Well, yes and no. I mean, the situation I thought was just, I didn't know anybody could, you know, succeed in that. So to his credit, he has. I haven't been surprised because he's such a good personality. I thought to be a head coach, he could see, you know, and you know him from, you guys both know him, is that his personality jives with the players. I mean, he can really relate to them. He's very smart, and he's turned it around, and he deserves a lot of credit, no question.
What's a bigger surprise to you? What's the biggest surprise to you in the season to this point? That's the better question. If you had to pick one thing that's a big surprise to you, what would it be?
I guess, you know, I'll answer it this way. It shouldn't be a surprise, but to me it is, and how bad Ottawa is. I had a lot of faith that Rick and Marcel, you know, really had a feel of what they were doing over there and what they were going to do and change their club. But as bad as they've fallen off, that caught me off guard a little bit. Even though when you look at their team, they're just bad. So I'm a little bit surprised that they let it happen. That's all.
Do you think that Rick Campbell will walk the plank for this one?
Well, in my opinion, he shouldn't. I don't think that's a very good team on the field personnel wise. He's proven that he's a good coach. I think he's gotten a lot out of that team in the last few years. And you don't win a Grey Cup out of fluke. But it's football, you know. If he does get the boot, nothing would surprise me, but I don't think he should.
But let's go a little revisionist history here. You got a football team that's leading Calgary when Darian Durant leaves in the fourth quarter in 2012. The defense doesn't get it done. You guys don't go to the next round. Okay, that's Corey's first year. The second year, you guys win a Grey Cup on home turf, maybe the biggest day in this team's history. The next year, you're 8-2 after you win the Banjo Bowl, even though Darren gets hurt in that game, and you still almost beat Edmonton with a 40-year-old quarterback throwing 5 interceptions. And then the next year, Darren starts by throwing for 168 yards against Winnipeg and blows his Achilles, and before you know it, you and Corey Chamberlain are gone. I mean, it's a fickle business. Like, honestly, looking back, did Corey Chamberlain deserve to be fired in 2015?
Well, you're talking to the wrong guy. you know what my answer is going to be, but it's the business. You know, when Jim Hobson got changed over, Craig came in and he wanted to put his fingerprint on that team. And the way I looked at it in revisionist history, like you say, is that he wanted to change the culture of that team and that organization football-wise. And I don't blame him for what he did. We were 0-9. I mean, you don't win games, you're going to get the boot, so... No, I mean, that's part of it. I have accepted it. I mean, I would have loved to have had another chance to keep it going, but we knew at the end of 15 that team was going to get blown up anyway. So whether it was us or Jones or whoever was going to do it, it was going to happen. So, hey, that's the way it goes sometimes.
That is the way it goes. Okay, before we let you go here, we're looking at Calgary and Hamilton right now in Calgary. And I'll tell you what, Dane Evans has surprised me. Like, they obviously like what they see from him. He's been hanging in there. They're lining up for the go-ahead field goal early on in that football game. But Calgary's waiting in the weeds, aren't they, Brendan, in the West?
Yeah, they are. They're a good team. They always are a good team. I expect them to be in the top two when it's all said and done. But Hamilton's really, like you said, I thought when Masoli went down, I thought they would really struggle. But they've really survived that, and they've been able to win those games. So I think they got a pretty good feel for first place in the East. So, and football, though, you never know.
Yeah, I think definitely Calgary's the team to beat with a healthy Bo Levi Mitchell, right?
Yeah.
That's just the way it goes. I know Saskatchewan and Winnipeg are doing their thing right now, looking like definitely they're going to give them a run for their money. But for sure, Calgary's the team to beat. And I think Montreal is starting to look like the team to beat out the East.
Well, I said that, and people were looking at me crazy. That's not an outlandish statement, do you think, Brendan? Like, I think the Montreal Alouettes could – like, it's a better than 60% chance the Montreal Alouettes are playing for the Grey Cup representing the East, which – if you bet that in Vegas, you're a rich man. You can retire because at the start of the year, like, what do you think?
I might need to look into that.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think that's an outlandish statement.
It isn't. I totally agree with you. I think they would have been hard-pressed to win 6 games if everybody was being honest with themselves to start the year. And they've surpassed that more. And yeah, I don't disagree with it. They might be the best team in the East. However, there's a 4th team in the West coming over, I think, again. And you never know if that, you know, eventually that's going to pay off and crossover is going to win. But I think Montreal's got a good chance. I think Wes was right earlier. I think we need to see more of the quarterback, though. He shows flashes, but I think he's going to carry it now. And I can't wait to see him play in this environment because this is a tough one for him.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Oh, that's the last thing I want to ask both of you guys before I let you go, Brendan, because Darian's talked about this. I want to see how Cody reacts and how he plays against the Winnipegs and Edmontons and Calgary. Well, here, he did a great job in the game-winning drive with the help of William Powell. In Winnipeg, not so much. But when I watched that game back, I didn't really have a lot of – there wasn't a lot to blame for me on Cody Fajardo. I mean, was he perfect? No. But I liked the way he battled till the end, till he was pulled out of the game. How did you feel about Cody's performance in a hostile environment? Because I thought he was the gamer right to the end. That's a positive sign for Rider Nation.
Oh, yeah, I think he's going to be fine. He's proven it, like I said, like the O-line has over those first two games. He's got a lot of developing still to do, but he's very poised. I mean, playing in the Banjo Bowl in Winnipeg and Westmoreland, it's not the easiest thing to do, no matter who's there. So he came through it as fine as you could expect. I mean, yeah, you want him to play better, but the whole team didn't play good, so... It was just one of those games you write it off, but I expect him to bounce back and play well today.
True. Banjo Bowl is definitely a tough place to play. You know, I think when I played, we won 3 out of 5 when I was there.
Yeah, there was a stretch.
But we got beat up the times we lost, right?
Yeah. So,
but I think the one thing about Fajardo I'll say is he kind of does have that eye of the tiger, you know, late in the game. He focuses in, and he's definitely a comeback kid. So, you know, so I'm not worried about that. What I'm worried about is that he needs that environment before he'll turn it on. I want to see him just play a whole game, just, you know, dropping dimes, you know, and moving the ball up and down the field and throwing for 400 as opposed to 200 in the last quarter or something like that.
Brendan, before I let you go, because I'm staring at him here, and he's going to be our next guest, Jeff Fairholme, who had that beautiful touchdown in the 89 Grey Cup. Of course, this is the 30th anniversary of the 89 Grey Cup. What do you remember about the 89 season?
I remember I went to Ottawa that year and we were terrible. So,
but you were a part of the organization though. Like, what do you think of that '89 team when you look back at that team? Because obviously, as a Saskatchewan boy, that's whether you're in Ottawa or wherever, it's still part of your DNA.
Yeah, no, they were a team of destinies the way I looked at them. They played, you know, up and down most of the year. Then they went into the playoffs and got on the run with a lot of injuries, and it was just their time, you know, and they played really well when it counted, just like every good team has to. And it was a really entertaining team to watch, that's for sure. And they played three really good games in the playoffs and definitely deserved to win the Grey Cup, that's for sure.
Brendan, thanks for this. I appreciate it as always. It's from the boardroom with Brendan Tamman. I appreciate it, Brendan. Take care.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thanks. We'll be back with more of Countdown to Kickoff on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. And welcome inside Harvard Studio 620 here at Mosaic Stadium, getting set for the Riders and the Montreal Alouettes. The last game of the summer here at Mosaic Stadium, if you look at the calendar here, because the Riders are on the road. They've only got two more home games after this one here at Mosaic Stadium. It is Where Are They Now? We usually tape this interview or have it live on the phone, but we're very fortunate to be joined by a guy who actually has been on this segment before, but he's in town for the 30th anniversary of the 1989 Grey Cup. It's Jeff Farrell, Maria number 18. How's things going?
Things are great, Michael. Just,
Jesus, headset's screwed up. Go ahead.
There you go. Yeah, loving this here.
Actually, you know what? Go over to that one, man. I'm sorry. Yeah, this one died here. Just if you can go sit there. I'm not sure what's going on here. And if not, we'll give you Wes's one. Technical difficulties, eh? That's how it works. I put that one on there.
But how's that?
That's 150% better. Awesome. Very cool. So have you had a good time so far this weekend?
We have had a great time, yeah. Rob Bresciani and his wife, Lori, have done a great job in organizing everything. We have been catered to, and we were at the beautiful Regina Minor Football Complex last night.
Yeah, Libel Field, yeah.
Yeah, really nice complex, by the way. And, so we had a nice little get-together last night, and golf this morning and brunch. So here I am, all fat and happy.
Hey, you're looking in great shape, my friend. Do you ever watch these games and wish you could still play?
No.
Is that gone?
Yeah, not even a little bit. Yeah, I know. I'm way past that. I did for a while, obviously.
How long? How long did it take you to get it out of your system?
Oh, 10 years maybe?
Yeah.
How about you, Wes? How long did it take?
The first time I tried to break into a sprint and it didn't feel good, I'm like, yeah, that was about 2 years after. I'm like, yeah, it's a young man's game. I'm good with that, I'm good.
Well, the game's changed so much. I see all these receivers running behind the line of scrimmage and all this motion. And I'm like, man, that just looks way too tiring for me.
You know, they always say you don't remember so much the wins and the losses. It's just the guys. You're getting a sense of that here. Is that really what you miss? Is the guys, you know, like 16 of you went golfing this morning. Like you said, you had the barbecue. You're at Libel Field. Is that really? Because you guys are a brotherhood. You are locked by that championship. Yeah. That's something nobody could take away from you.
Of my time playing, this is a team that I played with that is as tight of a group as I've ever seen. And Bill Baker stood up and spoke to us, which, you know, a few words turned into half an hour. Yeah. But that's beside the point. And, you know, he says, we don't talk about the games. You don't talk about the scores. You don't talk about who did what. It's the fun we had in the locker room and all the different stories. I mean, Rasevich is telling stories and Poli and, of course, Elgard. And, you know, it's a riot. Those are the things you remember most.
Are you closer to – now, this is a weird question. Are you closer to Ray now than you were when you played? Like was there a competition amongst you when you played? Because there was always that talk. I don't know if those guys really like each other. They're two different guys. How is your relationship now compared to back when you played?
It's really good, and we were great teammates, but we came from, I like to say, different sides of the track. I think Ray was a little uptight when I came in and didn't have to play special teams, and he did his thing on special teams before he was able to start. So he wasn't real thrilled about me, but, you know, time heals all wounds. And when I go to Vegas, I meet him and go up for a couple of drinks. And now we sat at the same table last night and today talking stories. So it's great. Yeah.
Wes, you know, to mimic or echo what Jeff was saying,
right.
Is that, you know, is it the one thing about you miss – not so much getting hit in the practices, it's missing the guys. Because the 2017, once again, a bond that will be with you forever.
No, for sure. It's definitely not the games and whatnot. You know, you have your high emotions and those memories from the games, but it's definitely like just the camaraderie, the hanging out. You know, some of my favorite things about when I played was like nights out with the fellas when everything, you know, it was just libations and good times. You know, nothing bad happening, just enjoying each other's company and proud of – you know, the success and the product you're building together. Yeah. So I think it's definitely the relationships you build and just the fun you have with the guys. Not as much. You forget half of the stuff that happens on the field, man. I remember more bad plays than good plays, you know.
No, that's a very good point. Hey, when you went into 89, did you have a sense that you were a team of destiny? Did you think this is our year, coming off that 88 season when you broke the long playoff drought? Or what was your feelings going into 89?
I don't think anybody had any huge expectations other than, you know, the goal is always to go to the Grey Cup and win it. I don't remember anyone having great expectations other than the norm. But something happened in the middle of the season that turned our season around, and we all kind of went, hey, you know, we might have a chance here. I think it was actually the play where there were two or three big interception calls. We ended up losing the game, interception calls against us. And we ended up losing the game, and it was a really heartbreaking loss. And
BC Lions, that one?
I think
Suter,
it was BC. Yeah,
Suter,
exactly.
Joe Gallat, the coach. And
that's the one.
They won with no time on the clock.
And we should have won that game. But, you know, we didn't get down. We came in the locker room, and it seemed like the next day we just turned the corner, and we just sort of said, you know, we're better than this. And, you know, we're still a 9-9 team. We weren't that great, obviously, but we got hot at the right time. And, you know, we beat a 16-2 team in Edmonton in the Western Final. And, you know, it is what it is. So,
what was more satisfying? Dumb question, maybe, but I don't think it's that dumb. What was more satisfying, knocking off that 16-2 juggernaut or winning the Grey Cup? Because to me, I know it was a tight game, but to me, I didn't see how you'd lose the Grey Cup after you smoked the Eskimos like that.
Yeah, well, a lot of people expected a huge letdown after that final. At the time, the Western Final was the biggest win, I think anybody on the team had ever had. But, you know, when you go into the Grey Cup, you know, there's a lot of nerves and a lot of anxiety, but a lot of expectation at the same time. Yeah. So that was obviously the best.
You don't remember plays. You guys say, I don't really remember plays. I'm going to ask each of you.
We remember some plays. Yeah.
So I want you to take me through the big play. The guy's on your back. It's a 75-yard touchdown in the Grey Cup. What do you remember about that sequence going into that play and the actual play?
Well, going into the play was really kind of funny because, as many people remember, Tom Burgess came in the Western Final and helped win the game for us, and he wasn't playing. So Kent Austin got the start in the final, in the Grey Cup, and Tommy came up to me at the before that series and asked me if I could beat my halfback deep, and I can't remember who it was, whether Gordon or Jordan, and I never said anything. I was very quiet, and I always say, you call him, I run him. But that time I looked at him and said, oh yeah, I can beat him deep, which I never did. So he went over to Kent called the play, and it was pretty simple protection, everything else.
What do you remember? Is there a famous play that you like that you remember that you could, like, basically Wes Cates, if you could run, like, you know, and not be sweating and stiff running a sprint, if you could just be transported into a play again, what play would you like to run again in your career?
Well, you know, everybody loves the 07 Grey Cup, the last run, right? That's always a classic. I didn't have to do much. I mean, I remember
You did it with a broken foot.
Yeah. I had a couple games against that. But that was a funny year, too, because I came into the team. I was traded in preseason. And the big thing was to beat BC in the final because they got trounced the year before.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the same situation with beating 16-2 Edmonton. BC was the juggernaut, and that was kind of the focus. But then we got into that Grey Cup and pulled it out, right? So I think just making that play, you know, Baron Simpson shot the gap. I saw him cut it up, and knew I had the yardage, and then it was just funny to see, like, me being a new guy on a team full of guys that have been itching for much. I don't think I appreciated it as much as the guys like the Gene Mikowskis and the Kerry Josephs, the Jeremy O'Days, but it felt great to be a part of it and to see how much it meant.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because when I think of that, that's exactly what I think of. When I think of your championship, I told Paulie and Aldag this, Jeff. Jeff Fairholm joining us, by the way. I said, you know, it reminds me when the Capitals won the Cup a couple years ago. You think Ovechkin was the only guy that won the Cup. As soon as you guys won the 89 Grey Cup, I didn't think anybody else was going to get to touch it. Paulie and Aldag had the thing everywhere, right?
Well, we won it for them. Yeah. I mean, I was a second-year player. And yeah, they hadn't even come close to a sniff of the Grey Cup in the past, let alone, you know, even whatever. So, they, we won it for them, and it was so – it was so great to see them walk into Taylor Field at the time with the Grey Cup, with the stands filled and freezing cold, and you know, that's what we remember most. Yeah. And that's you know, for those guys, I'm still happy we had a chance to win it for them.
You guys were both talented, hardworking, humble players. You just talked about not calling the shots. You didn't go back and really whine at the quarterback, throw me the ball. Okay,
never.
How do you feel about today's athlete, today's diva receiver that likes to call the shots and give me the ball, and if I don't get the ball, I'm going to pout and stomp on the sidelines?
Not a fan of it, obviously. Yeah, I mean, it's just not the type of player I was. So I'm not a fan of it. I'm not, you know, it's hard to watch football these days, in all honesty. It's not just the type of player that's out there now, but it's the rules have changed, and you can't even touch the quarterback. And even, you know, God, I wish I could run downfield and not be you know, harassed by a DB before the ball's thrown. It'd be wonderful. But, you know, to me, it's not the game I played. But then again, when I played, when my dad played, he'd say the same thing about that game. So it evolves, and you know, still watch it and still enjoy it.
How about you, Wes? Because you weren't the guy that said, give me the ball, just give it to me, give it to me, I'll do something with it.
I have mixed emotions about it. One, because I believe in, you know, being a team player, and, you know, everybody's got to be on the same page for you to have success. You know, you don't have to have the best scheme to be the best team if everybody goes out and believes in that scheme and executes. But looking back on it, I feel like if I would have been more of a give-me-the-ball type of guy, things might have been a little different as far as, you know, finishing off some games and things like that. So, you know, it's all behind you. But you think about it like, you know, you see a guy say, give me the ball, and then he goes out there and wins a game for you, and you're like,
give him the ball.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Okay, last question for both of you guys, okay? Is it more important to you guys, start with you, Jeff, is it more important, Jeff Fairholme, for you to have a Grey Cup ring or to have your name on the Grey Cup?
It's more important to me to have my name on the Grey Cup. I'm lucky enough to have it twice. Yep. My dad's on there once. And I was in Touchdown Atlantic there a couple weeks ago where the Grey Cup was, and I saw the, you know, they got a nice new plaques on there and all the new names. And that's what I look for. And that'll live forever. You know, it's well, maybe in 100 years you'll take the ring off. But, you know, this ring doesn't last forever, and I'll be gone. But that name will be on that cup forever.
How about you, Wes? Do you echo those sentiments?
Yeah, I think precisely, right? It's on the cup. So many people are going to be exposed to it, look at it. You know what I mean? A lot more than your ring is going to be exposed to people. So I think definitely just having it on that cup, and it's just always going to be there, right? It's just like being in a Hall of Fame. It's just always going to be there.
But having said that, I ain't giving up my ring.
Right.
Well, they always say we're chasing the ring. They don't say we're chasing the engraving.
Right.
We're chasing the ring, right?
True. I mean, they both represent the same thing, and I think you can take care of it.
But you know what? I think the ring is powerful when you guys go to an event or you're speaking, you know, you're in sales, Jeff, or you're speaking to kids or something, and you got the ring on. You can't take the Grey Cup everywhere. If you say, I came from this, and I overcame this, and I worked hard, and I got this, it's just a symbol of hard work and dedication and all that type of stuff. Well, Jeff, it's always a pleasure talking to you, man. You definitely a part of my youth growing up. That was a memorable play. I suffered through a lot of I remember I went to the 88 playoff game. My brother and I, we begged our parents to buy us tickets. Riders had ended up a playoff drought.
Right.
They're playing BC at the old Taylor Field. It was so damn cold. We went into the bathroom because it was the only heated place, and they used to have troughs there to go to the bathroom, not urinals. And we just went around and around and around and stayed in the bathroom at halftime. You guys got smoked 42-18, but thankfully you redeemed yourself the next year.
We
outstanding.
Did.
Jeff, thanks for this. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Michael. Anytime.
We're going to have more Countdown to Kickoff on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. And welcome back to Harvard Studio 620 here at Mosaic Stadium. And the Hamilton Tiger Cats get a touchdown from Brandon Banks and then get the two-point convert from Anthony Coombs. And they're in front of the Calgary Stampeders at McMahon Stadium 14-3 as Wes Cates joining me here on the stage here inside the lounge. I'll tell you what, the Tiger Cats are making a statement here early on in this football game.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed with them. You know, they lost Mazzoli, but when he was there, it was almost like you thought they were the team to beat in the whole league.
So I thought they'd be done, and Dane Evans takes over. So let me ask you this. Was that good for the league? Like, obviously it's not good for the league when your stars go down.
Right.
But we got to, you know, because not a lot of times, and Darian's admitted this before too, I don't like to give up reps as a starter in practice, right? There's the whole job thing, it's my team, that type of stuff. But when you're forced into it, it's a good thing to see what you got, I guess, if you're looking for a silver lining. How did you feel about those injuries and kind of the turning of the guard here at quarterback?
Yeah. To be a player, you want that comfortableness, you know what I mean, to not have anybody pressing for your spot. But as a management group, as a coach, you know, you want studs at every, you know, all the way down to the third or even fourth spot if you can have it. So I think anytime a guy gets injured and a younger guy or another guy can step in and not really miss a beat, you get excited about that, right? Because you're like, okay, we're good there. Yeah. Now let's work on these positions over here. Yeah. And let's see, you know what I mean, work at this guy or that guy. So I think you don't worry about it. If you're confident in your job as a player, you know, I always had good backs behind me, but they didn't know as much. Or, you know, there were just things. So you just do what you can do and let the chips fall where they may.
Were you the kind of guy that would impart wisdom, or did you kind of guard? Because a lot of those veteran guys, they got Brett Favre never helped Aaron Rodgers. He admits to it. Like, he didn't want to help him too much.
Yeah.
Were you a guy that helped, or were you a guy that kind of gave, oh, I'll give 70, but I'm going to keep 30 for myself, the 30 that I need to keep my job?
Yeah, sometimes I thought I helped a little too much, right? Because you're thinking, like, this guy's, you know, young guy's a little more athletic or whatever the case may be. So, but I always just said, whatever, it'll work out for me in the end. So I was always, you know, trying to give guys little tidbits. And, you know, whatever I picked up from one guy, I would just pass on to the next. I never really worried about that stuff because I knew I wasn't going to be around for long. And, you know, you might as well make the next guy better and feel good. Then you can take a little part in his success, right?
What's the thing you didn't appreciate about the game or the league that you appreciate now when you left? Like, what? Like, was there something that when you're in the heat of the battle you didn't really appreciate?
Yeah, I just say, you know, the management moves and the decisions that are made. You when you're playing, you know, you think that there's always a reason why you keep a guy. But then once you're out, and you kind of understand, and you're looking at it, you know, from you know, with the lens as opposed to being right in the middle of it, you kind of get those moves a little more, and then you start saying, ooh, I don't know, that guy's making a lot of money. I don't know if he's going to have the same type of season, and then that those type of thoughts creep into your mind, and you're like, okay. Yeah. I can see how somebody was looking at me that way once.
Yeah.
Right?
that's very honest, Wes. So of the young quarterbacks that have come here, like Dane Evans, Nick Arbuckle, Cody Fajardo, and I wouldn't call McLeod Bethel-Thompson necessarily young, but of some of them young gunslingers, who's the guy that's impressed you the most that's come out of nowhere? Like, who would you say, wow, this guy, you know, I could see this guy leading a team and being a championship type of quarterback? Or is it too early to tell?
Vernon
Adams
Jr.,
another one.
Yeah, I think Evans is a good one, you know. I think that was the biggest surprise or dip, I thought. Once we saw Mazzoli leave, I thought the Hamilton was really going to struggle. But it seems like they're kind of getting their feet back and they're going to be a contender. But for Jardo, obviously, I was really worried about him when he had that bad game before the first bye week. But then he came out and man, he played well. And I was like, okay, Cody. Like, I saw the ability then, and I know as long as he keeps working hard, he'll be a good quarterback.
So if you were his running back, you were on that team, you'd be like, I'm buying in. This guy has potential to be my leader and be my guy.
Yeah, because when you have a bad game like that, and then it's just all about bounce back, right? No, you know, we're all going to fail. You know, the most successful people in the world fail the most. So you're going to have those bad days, and if you can bounce back, then that shows that you're a dude that can handle when things aren't going well.
Okay, so I'm looking at these two running backs today, William Powell and William Stanback. Let's talk about William Powell first. What do you like about his game?
I like he's not the biggest back, but he plays solid and he's shifty and smooth. He's sneaky. He's the type of guy that it doesn't really necessarily look like he's pounding through the hole or whatever the case may be, but he's slipping through there and making the most of his runs. I think he's very knowledgeable and just has a feel for the holes and he's got great vision, right? You look at the holes that he runs through, they're not that big, but then he's slipping through for 7-8 yards.
How tough is it? Because what I find about him is, he could deke you out in a phone booth. Very, very shifty in the hole. He can make two or three moves in the hole. But how tough is it to be patient, to be a patient runner in the hole when there's so many bodies around you? Because he seems to have a lot of ice water in his veins. Kind of West Cage, because you like to set up your blocks. Yeah. How tough is it to be patient?
Well, it's real tough, really, and especially if you're a speedster, right? Because you see a lot of these guys, they just want to bounce it outside. And once you do that, you kind of leave all your blocking and you're out there on your own. So that's a tough go of it. And then you take a couple of weird shots and you kind of don't do that as much. But I think when you can be patient you know, get to your reads. You know, a lot of times you'll see running backs just running at a low lineman. You'll wonder what he's doing. He's kind of pressing, trying to get defenders to flow so guys can get better blocks. So if you can be that type of guy that understands that as a runner and know that it's not going to happen if you just go now, you got to help out your blockers and you got to take your time, then I think you'll have success. But it's easier said than done.
Can you teach patience or do you just have it?
I think you just have it. I think you can drill it into a guy until he slows down, and once he gets his head banged around a few times, maybe he'll learn, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But learn it the hard way. But I think it can be taught, but you're better off just sticking with a guy who does it naturally.
Yeah, okay. And lastly, before we go to break here and get to Luke Molitor, what do you like about William Stanback's game?
I think Stanback is one of those, you know, in this league, if you've got a bigger back that has some speed and, you know, just plants, puts his foot in the ground and goes. He seems like the type of guy that he's not necessarily putting a bunch of moves on you, but he's getting you off balance and then he's just running through arm tackles. And coaches love that because, you know, it's a guy that's getting north and south.
Yeah.
And he's got the type of speed that if you mess around and let him get on the open field, you're going to have a tough time chasing him down. So I think Montreal is set with Stanback. He's a different type of back than Powell, but they're both very productive in the way they go about it.
When we come back on the other side, Wes Cates and I will be joined by Luke Molitor, our color commentator, former Rider defensive lineman, Grey Cup champion. You're listening to Countdown to Kickoff on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio. Oh, yeah, sorry. Yes, before we go to break, we have to go to profiles. Let's hear from Riders offensive lineman, Darius Bladick.
Time now for profiles with Riders stud offensive lineman. Pronounce your name.
Darius Bladick.
Okay, good. That's good because I said Fajardo's name the way you're supposed to say it.
Yes, that sounded good.
Yeah, no, but I said Fajardo, which is how you're supposed to say it, but then everybody says it wrong, so he said just say Fajardo. So I'm glad you cleared that up. No how many problem. Times does your name get butchered?
All the time. All the time. I'm just happy that they get right on game day. That's all I'm worried about.
And you're happy that you're on a field they call it on game day, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's good to be back out there, hear my name be called.
You know, last year's injury, then you get hurt here. I know you're a young guy yet, but do you start thinking about your football mortality and maybe your luck, in a sense?
You know, it's football. I mean, you never know when it's going to happen. It was a series of unfortunate events to end the year how it did last year. And then, fortunately, started this year, you know, especially when the preseason went well. But I'm back on the field now, and that's all in the past. And, you know, when you get an injury, you learn from it, you grow from it. You know, sometimes there's nothing to learn or grow from. Just get healthy and get your ass back.
Who's the opponent? When you line up against him on the other team, on whatever team, that you have to really grind against. I know you grind against everybody, but you know when you line up against him, you're in for a long day.
I mean, I think depending on the scenario, but if I had to like, choose one, you know, you're looking at, you know, the Mondos, you know, Nevis, those guys, you know. Even
how about Ted LaRon here with Hamilton?
Even him, you know, he's a strong fella. You know, in the run game, he's stout, and you're going to have to come off the ball. And they do a very good job, win and him, do a very good job with taking on double teams. So,
a couple more fun questions for you.
Sure.
What's the last movie you watched? First of all, have you ever walked out of a movie?
No. If I'm paying for it, I'm going to watch it, shitty or not.
Okay, so I went to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, a Tarantino movie here with Pitt and DiCaprio just came out. Uh-huh. I walked out with 45 minutes to go, they say it was the best 45 minutes, but I just couldn't take it anymore.
Was it too slow?
It was too slow, but it picked, it was two hours and 45 minutes. Like, don't you agree, movies should be 2 hours or less?
I think 2 hours or less is a good thing. I think 2 hours, if you can't fit the plot of the story in 2 hours, you know, you get a little bit tired. The only movie that I'll let run is Avengers, because that you're combining almost eight movies into one.
Yeah, that's true. So. What's your favorite movie of all time?
I don't know what movie off the top of my head.
Okay, so let's talk about this. Is summer your favorite season? Do you like summer?
Love summer. Yeah, summer's great.
What's your favorite part of summer besides being here at the football field?
Favorite part, the sun, you know, not having the snow.
Yeah.
You know, I always say I come up to Saskatchewan during the best time. You know, I go down to Florida when the snow comes, and I come back, and I got a bunch of sun. So I love the weather out here. You know, right now with no snow, especially me and my Camaro, I'm not trying to be in that too much.
Did you ever go to a fair growing up as a kid? Like, when the fair comes to town?
Yeah, always. Up in Jersey, they used to have it at the Meadowlands where the Jets play. So we would be out there and it's always a good time. You know, I'm a fat little kid.
Yeah, okay.
I'm a fat big boy now.
Okay, so rides or the food?
Food. Oh, yeah. 100% food.
Okay, you mentioned Camaro. What year is it?
2018.
20. I love those cars.
Yeah.
I watch Hawaii 5-0 and the guys drive a Camaro. I want that to be my midlife crisis car. Have you always been a car guy?
I wouldn't say a car guy where I know all the whistles about it, but a car guy where, you know, I saw something nice and I thought I could treat myself while I don't have kids yet. I'm a big fella. I don't think that many people can fit in that car with me. So I'll enjoy it while I'm young, and then, one day I'll switch around maybe.
What color?
Black. Black on black. Yeah, black on black, RS. It's nice. It's my baby.
Awesome.
I would get the windows tinted if it wasn't for Saskatchewan. I have a plate, Saskatchewan plate.
Okay,
so.
And then you're driving your beautiful car down Albert Street. What music are you listening to in your car?
What music? I think I'm going to have to go Hot Shower by Chance the Rapper. The Rapper just came out with a really good album, and Hot Shower has a really good flow. That's what I'm going to be listening to.
Okay, I've asked guys this every week. I'm going to ask you these last two questions. Your best habit. What's your best habit, maybe as it relates to football? What do you hang your hat on?
Never feeling like I'm good enough. I always, no matter what I do, even if I have a really good block, I feel like there was something I could have done better, whether it's the start, the mid process, or the last phase. I mean, anything. Lifting, I always feel like there's more I could do. There's always another step I could take. I think that that keeps me humble and that keeps me working hard.
Okay, lastly then, I always ask the guys, ask Manny this last week, what is a bad habit or something you wanna work on or something you always wanna get better at?
I need to sleep. Sleeping. You know, there's a lot of studies out there that show sleeping does wonders for you, even taking midday naps. And I have trouble at night not getting to bed, and it ain't even trying to stay up. It's, you know, my mind's thinking, and I just can't go to sleep. So I gotta find a way to break that bad habit so I could get some more rest. I think it would help me elevate my game.
That's Dariush Bladek. Am I close?
Dariush Bladek.
Yeah, Dariush Bladek. Okay, Dariush good. Bladek. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And welcome back to Harvard Studio 620 here at Mosaic Stadium. It's the Saskatchewan Roughriders and the Montreal Alouettes wrapping up this week's action right now on the out-of-town scoreboard. Hamilton is just into Calgary territory, 14-3. They lead it with 3.5 to go until halftime as Dane Evans is slinging it too hard there for Addison out of bounds. Here with Luke Molitor. Molitor's matchup. Are you surprised by that score?
No. Hamilton can win this game. They're a really good team. But Calgary's going to be fine. We're coming up on the final third of the season. I actually think that Calgary enjoys being in this position.
Yeah,
I think
something different. Something different for them.
Yeah, they haven't been in this situation for a while. They get to coach differently. So I'm excited to see how the rest of this plays out.
How excited are you to see how the Riders respond from an absolute debacle last week?
Actually, I'm not as excited as you might think I am. I'm really curious, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this game right here is going to be their most physical game, and I think we're going to find out a lot about them. I call this game the mirror check game.
Yeah.
And when we talk about Mullinder's matchup today, it's the matchups against the guy in the mirror. They looked horrible in parts against Winnipeg in the Banjo Bowl. And that's not an understatement, that's not an exaggeration. There were some things that were fundamentally wrong with the attitude and the approach of the Saskatchewan Roughriders. So I think that today, once you see all the mistakes that you made on film, all the tackles that you could have made but didn't want to, Now, hear what I say. You mm-hmm. could have made but didn't want to. There was a lot of plays out there that the guys just – for some reason weren't as determined and as focused as they should have been. Today, they'll lose if they come out here and attack the Montreal Alouettes, because this team is coming. They're glued as well as they can be. They're playing well together, but they are a physical team, especially this defense. They've taken a lot of their attitude off of Enoch Mwamba, who loves to play physical. They got a guy like John Bowman who has been there, done that. He's been in every situation that this defense has seen. They got Patrick Levels playing at a high level. It's a veteran defense, and they're not playing around. So you come out here today not ready to play physical, not only will you lose, but again, I think that it's one of those games where you're going to find out a lot about yourself.
Wes said earlier in the broadcast that this is his coach of the year game. He said whoever wins this game, this is who we'd give the vote for coach of the year if the season ended today. Do you agree with that sentiment? Because I think Kahari Jones should get a lot of publicity that way. But then Wes brought up a good point. I mean, Craig Dickinson was thrust into something that he wasn't really looking for, yeah. and he's turned it into pretty good. I'm interested to see how Dickinson handles his team after that clunker of a game.
Well, you know what I think it is? I think that Dickinson and Kahari, they've played the new generation of athlete really well. And I was talking to Wes about this off during a break. This is a different generation of athlete. This is an athlete that does not like taking constructive criticism. Mm-hmm. This is an athlete that doesn't like, you know, when I talked to Bowman out there today, Bowman says that, you know, if I tell them something, all they do is spit back, oh, yeah, old man, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what? I'm thinking in the back of my mind, that's John Bowman. That's one of the greatest DNs that has ever played in this league. And there's cats that literally call him an old man. Those cats better pray and wish and whatever religion they are that they'll have a career like John Bowman's.
Yeah.
Right? So you have a generation of athlete that is you have to coach differently. And I think that Craig and Coach Dickinson and Kahari are trying to play that. I think that's one of the reasons why Mike Sherman didn't work out in Montreal. Mike Sherman, shoot, if you would have told him he could, they would have been in 2 days, all camp,
yeah,
right,
point.
Padded, not yeah. no yeah. ice tubs, nothing, right, yeah. like in the parking lot.
Yeah.
It's a generational gap between the players that Wes is used to dealing with and myself and now.
Yeah.
And I think both of these coaches are figuring out the balance of actually having to implement and coach and talk too hard versus sitting back, because this generation, I'm telling you, you can't just be like, hey man, I need you to smarten up.
Yeah,
you can't look a guy in the eye and say, I need you to smarten up, I need you to play better. That on film was ridiculous. It was soft. They'll pout.
Yeah.
So,
right.
And that's not just this team. I'm not just saying Saskatchewan Roughriders. I'm saying this is the generation of athlete that these coaches have to deal with these days.
Do you have a comment on that?
Yeah, you definitely have to kind of be the athlete whisperer as a coach, right? You gotta kind of you gotta have like 50 different conversations a day, because everybody has their way they need to be talked to. The days of the my way or the highway coach are gone. You know, you come into a locker room talking like that, next thing you know, you're getting your pink slip. Like, what the heck? What happened? Yeah. Right? So, because players kind of, you know, everybody's got a big ego and everybody has to be talked to a certain way. And I need this and I need that. And it does. It makes it tricky. But the easygoing intellectual coaches seem to understand how to navigate that.
Did you guys have that? Let me ask you this. Great guy to talk to about this, because you've referenced 2011. I think Greg Marshall was dead right from the get-go when he coached. Because here's what I get. I personally like Greg Marshall as a man. Never was coached by him, so I can't speak to that. But you got a guy with a bombastic personality that's here yelling, you guys are 0-1, 0-2, 0-3, 0-4. Right. And Ken Miller is still in the mix. He's on the sidelines, and you're there going, this is how I picture it. Why would we listen to you when we're 0-5, when we were just winning with that guy the last couple of years, and he's still here and he had a different approach?
I felt bad for Greg, and you pretty much hit the nail on the head. Like, when he came in, it was kind of like, hey, we've been winning like this, and even though, you know, Ken is the VP of stuff, we kind of want you to do it like him. And it's like, how are you going to ask Greg Marshall to be like Ken Miller? Like, everybody knows he was the easygoing grandpa, as they like to call him, right? And then you ask a guy who's really like a rule with the iron fist kind of coach, and he's over there like biting his tongue every second. I thought he was going to like fall out from a stroke or something, because it looked like every second he was holding back from going off on a guy.
And it didn't help every time Coach Miller would come out to practice. Greg Marshall would be here coaching that way, and Miller would be 5 feet behind him.
Yeah.
And Coach Miller didn't understand that. Like, he didn't know. Like, it wasn't like he was doing it on purpose. He was generally coming out there to spend time with the guys, and but the problem was that all of us that like Ken Miller during practice, if he was out there, we'd be like hanging around with his golf cart and stuff like that, right? When Marshall would be coaching his butt off, and it just never worked. It was, oh well.
All right, well, before we let you go, just to reiterate, it's the man in the mirror game, as Michael Jackson would like to say.
This is the man in the mirror game. The matchup is the Saskatchewan Rough Riders versus themselves. They have to get out of their own way today.
Yeah.
They have to be communicating, and again, defensively, the things that you put on film against Winnipeg, those have to be rectified, because those weren't those guy or the opponent making plays. Those were the opponent just getting away with just poor effort. And I'll tell you what, I promise you this, William Standback, you're not tackling him with your hand.
Yeah.
You're not swiping at his foot.
Yeah.
He'll break it. He'll literally run right through your wrist.
Yeah.
So, again, you have to come today prepared to play physical, and if you don't, you're going to take an L.
All right, man. Thanks for this. Appreciate it. Can't wait to hear your work up in the booth with Derek Taylor. Hey, we're going to Give you a chance to win a $25 gift card to KFC. They're one of our title sponsors. You want to get a meal on KFC, call 936-6262 or toll-free out of town at 1-866-767-0620. It's Countdown to Kickoff on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. Time now for the Devil's Take with former Saskatchewan Rough Rider, legendary quarterback Darian Durant. And Darian, did that game last week say more about the Rough Riders, more about the Blue Bombers, or was that just a clunker that you have on the schedule when you play 18 and 20 games, I guess, if you count the preseason?
I mean, I think you can look at it a couple different ways. You have to give Winnipeg a lot of credit for bouncing back and definitely taking care of their home field. IG Field is a tough place to play, and, you know, with that defense revved up like it was, you know, you're going to expect that at home, especially in a game of the magnitude as the Banjo Bowl. So that's what I take from that, as well as the Saskatchewan Rough Riders definitely need to figure out how to get some momentum going on the road. I mean, away from home. You know, it just seems like they're not the same team. So if they can find out ways to get the offense rolling on the road, you know, then they can get something going.
Yeah, that's kind of a really good point. And why do you, like, theorize for me why you think that is? Why do teams, I mean, obviously teams play better at home because they've got the fan base, but how do you make yourself, or how do you manufacture that same energy on the road away from Mosaic Stadium?
I just think they need to find some big plays from somewhere, whether it's a trick play or whether it's just taking more shots downfield. I think the biggest thing when you're on the road is to try to take the energy out of the building, try to take the crowd out. You know, the players are usually a little bit more amped, you know, being on their home turf. So you can get some big plays going, get some momentum early to take the crowd out and, you know, to put some doubt in the other team, then you can have some success.
Are you surprised with how the Rider defense is playing this year? I know before last week's game, they had gone five games without giving up 20 points, which is pretty good. But I don't know, they just don't seem to have the same pop they did last year. Obviously, you're not going to have 11 defensive touchdowns or whatever the heck it was. But they seem to be, they don't seem to be the same defense. And I know they lost a couple of guys too, Jefferson and Aguavin, to name just two.
I mean, those are huge losses. I think, you know, when you have a guy like Jefferson putting pressure on the quarterback, the ball has to get out a lot earlier, and it allows the DBs to prey on the ball. I mean, they do have some great pressure up front with Charleston Hughes and, you know, Leonard and a couple of the guys that get a little bit of pressure. But the biggest difference is, you know, that linebacking core. You don't have you know, the guy, Sam Aguavin out there running around making plays. And I don't think they're as aggressive as they were last year. Chris Jones did a lot of blitzing. He forced the quarterback to get rid of the ball a lot earlier than he wants to. And, you know, this year it seems like they're sitting back a little bit more.
You know what, Darian, it boggles my mind that number five, Willie Jefferson. Like, that game last week really spun on two plays. It was the punt return for a touchdown when the Riders looked like they had all bases covered there. Everybody was, in fact, they got a penalty for no yards on the play, but the guy takes it back. Mm-hmm. And then Willie Jefferson comes through unblocked and forces a fumble. How don't you know where number five is?
I know, it amazes me. I mean, you know, that should be one of the first things that you recognize when you come up to the line of scrimmage is where is number five, because he's a game changer. But, you know, Richie Hall does some great things, and he gets a lot of criticism, but he's very creative with how he handles his players, how he gets pressure on the quarterback. He's very unique in his different styles of defense that he plays, and he confuses you a lot. You know, I'm pretty sure the look that he gave when Willie made that play, it was something that he hadn't shown previously. That's what Richie's known for, just trying to cause confusion. So it's definitely something you have to recognize when you come to the line of scrimmage where your best pass rushers are, and they didn't do a good job on that play.
Darian Durant joining us here for the Devil's Take, the very popular segment on the Rider Radio Network. Now, I wouldn't suggest Cody played a spectacular game, but I really liked how he competed till the end, and I thought it was, you know, maybe they could have pulled him out a bit earlier, but I like when he was in there that he kept battling till the end, which is a good characteristic.
No question. That's a valuable time for Cody. That's a learning experience for him. You have to go through every single trial and every single situation that you're going to be in as the season progresses as a quarterback. You have to let Cody learn from that. He's a young guy, so all of these types of games, they help him grow, and him fighting to the end, him showing his character will definitely help the team as it moves forward. It's about to get cold. The games are going to get tougher, so you're going to need that fight from Cody.
Yeah, and I'm surprised the games are going to get colder. You're going to need a running game. I'm surprised the Rough Riders didn't really try to establish that run more with William Powell. They haven't the last couple of games, actually. Was that a thing where they were getting beat up on the lines, or is it a thing where schematically they just didn't go to William Powell because he had four carries for 1 yard?
Yeah, I mean, you have to give Winnipeg's defense a lot of credit. They made sure that, he wasn't going to be a factor in the game. And also, when you get down early and, the home team has the momentum, you feel like you have to throw to kind of dig yourself out of that hole. So, it's like I said, it's a learning experience for everyone. I think sometimes, games of that magnitude can put you in situations that you don't want to be in. So, I wish the Riders would have established the run game a little bit earlier, but you have to give Winnipeg's defense a lot of credit. They made sure that they weren't able to do it.
For lack of a better word, you look at the Eastern Division, and it's pretty crappy, except for those two teams, Hamilton and Montreal. Obviously, we'll talk about the Alouettes in a second. But as a human being, I know you guys are taught to just concentrate on this one, go 1-0 this week. But as a human being, do you guys sneak a peek at the standings and go, hey, you know what? We're already in the playoffs. I mean, can that seep into a locker room?
No question. I mean, each and every player is aware of where you are in the standings every week. You know what's at stake. You know who's creeping up. You know what you have to do to protect, or if you're in a situation where you can get a home game. So you're aware of everything. And, that's just the human nature of it. That's how sports work. So, at the end of the day, you have to focus on the game at hand, but you do know what's at stake and you do know who you're playing against and, whether they're Eastern or Western Conference. And, sometimes you tend to let off a little bit against the East, but with the Montreal team coming in, that's pretty hot. You can't do that.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's where I was going with this, because this feels like a trap game for me. I don't feel real confident about this game for a couple of reasons. Alouettes are going to come in here, and they're going to be a little bit choked because that last game was cut short because of the storm in Montreal, so they might have a little chip on their shoulder. And it's hard mm-hmm. to manufacture that energy on home turf when you're playing an Eastern opponent, especially, you only see them once a year here, even for the fan base.
No question. It's always a little bit of a letdown for whatever reason, whether it's the atmosphere in the stands or if it's your attitude in the locker room. And that's something you can't help. But in this case, with the team like Montreal coming in, the way that they're playing, especially how the last game ended, like you said, I think the Riders have no choice but to be up for this. They need the fan support. They need the energy in Regina for this game, because this is a huge game. This is a statement game, because, Montreal is trying to make a statement and the Riders are trying to make a statement going forward.
Kahari Jones has made a statement. I think that statement is, I'm coach of the year. I think this guy, if I was voting today, he'd be coach of the year, especially taking over that tire fire. Kavis Reed's gone. Mike Sherman's gone. He has to come in and clean up the mess. And I'll tell you what, I said last week, I would not be surprised if I had to bet money. I might put money on Montreal being in the Grey Cup for the East.
No question, Kahari deserves Coach of the Year at this point. What he's done with that team, what he's done with Vernon Adams, just settling him in, putting him in a system that allows him to flourish and allows him, his skill set to up to the forefront. That's just amazing. And the way that team has just rallied around him and how they've embraced him as their coach, they've embraced his mentality as well. They're just fired up. They're excited to be where they are. So it's been a lot of down years in Montreal, and I think that with this momentum that this team is building, they're a scary team coming out of the East. They're definitely a team I look out for going forward.
Yeah, for sure. That's a very good point. I like Vernon Adams Jr. I like where things are going for him. He reminds me a little bit of you. I know I say that I said that about Cody, but he reminds me a little bit of you. You're a little thicker, but he's got the same kind of stature in the way he looks downfield to make plays, but uses his legs, and he's really catching on to the game, kind of like you did in 2009, 2010.
No question. And just like a lot of the good young up-and-coming quarterbacks, he's had a chance to sit behind some guys and learn. He's been in the meeting rooms with myself, Kevin Glenn, Anthony Calvillo. You know, he's definitely a student of the game. Just being around him personally, I was able to see just his study habits, see how he, you know, wants to learn from the veterans, wants to know what's going on in every situation. And with him sitting for a couple years, you know, you can see the growth in him. You can see that this is his time and that he's ready and he's embraced it. And Kahari's done a great job of putting a system in place that's allowing him to be successful.
And Darian, 1989, the championship team, they're celebrating 30 years here today as they're going to honor that team, which was the second Grey Cup in Rough Rider history. I want to ask you, so that was a big thing in my childhood, and that was a lot of people remember that, and that's kind of their first championship for this era. Like guys like me in their 40s where they're like, oh, yeah, I remember we finally won a championship. It had been 23 years before that. For you and your childhood, what was the one championship team or championship memory you remember, not as a player, but just as a guy growing up that you're like, oh, yeah, that was my team or that was a great memory? Was it one for you?
Well, for me, it's three. It's that the Cowboys dynasty of the 90s. You know, my mom is a huge Dallas Cowboys fan, and, you know, every Super Bowl that they were in during that time, we were right in front of the TV. And I grew up just loving the Cowboys. I had Herschel Walker jerseys growing up, you know, the helmet, everything. So that early 90s Cowboys team was definitely, you know, one of my earliest memories of success and how a championship team is supposed to look.
And how cool was it that your brother, I think your brother actually played for the Cowboys. How cool is that?
Oh, it was wonderful just to experience it, you know, going there, going experiencing the atmosphere on game day in that beautiful stadium, you know, the largest Jumbotron in sports history. It's just amazing. So to be able to have that, you know, experience with my brother was amazing, and, you know, something I'll always cherish.
Darian, thanks for this. It's always a pleasure talking to you. This is a very popular segment, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, okay?
Okay, sounds good. Thanks again.
Thanks, Darian. And this is Growing the Game with Ballsy, a regular feature where we like to highlight amateur football in the province, and we like to highlight the stars that went from amateur football into the Canadian Football League or maybe even the NFL. But we're going to concentrate on football players born in Saskatchewan that played in the Canadian Football League. And I'm joined on the phone by the outstanding writer from the Leader Post, Rob Vanstone, who you hear on our Sports Cage regularly and a halftime show with Mitchell Blair. How are you today, Rob?
I'm fine, thanks, Paulsy. How are you doing?
Good, man. Okay, so I went to you. You're the Rolodex of information. I want you to compile Rob Vanstone's your top 10 Saskatchewan-born CFLers. Let's start with number 10, Mr. Vanstone.
Oh, boy, this is a tough one. I'm going to go with Norm Fieldgate, former lineman with the BC Lions. He's in the Canadian Football Hall of Fame, born in Regina. Most of the players on this list played for the Rough Riders. Norm Fieldgate's an exception. Just a tremendous player.
All right, number nine, Rob Band. So number nine, Saskatchewan-born CFLer.
Wayne Shaw played 12 seasons with the Riders. He was born near Davidson, I think between on a farm. The Shaws lived on a farm, I think between Davidson and Bladworth. Started playing football, went to high school at Notre Dame, started playing there. 12 seasons with the Riders. He was an all-star in six of them. He isn't in the Canadian Football Hall of Fame, unlike most people on this list, but I think there's a very good case for inducting him.
Okay, Rob, next one on your list, coming in at number eight.
Oh, boy. I think there's a good case. You could mention most of these in the top one or two. There's so many of them that are almost interchangeable, but I'm going to go with Ted Ernest, former Rider center, 1961 to 1970. He was an all-star the last half of his career. Probably could have played longer than he did. Just a tremendous football player. Bud Grant used to say that Ted Ernest could have played the National Football League. He was that good.
Yeah, he was, absolutely. Some of these guys I regret I never had a chance to watch with my own eyeballs, but definitely go down in Rider lore for sure and CFL lore. Okay, the next one on your list, my friend.
Let's go with Ken Charlton. And again, another member of the Canadian Football Hall of Fame from Regina. Tremendous halfback. Could do a tremendous punter. Could could do pretty much a receiver, could do so much offensively in the 40s into the starting in the 40s, going into the 1950s, a long career and a great great player. Again, Canadian Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's
the recording.
Yeah, that's right. It seems to be a common theme. At number six, who do you got, Rob Banstone?
Bill Clark, tremendous defensive lineman from Regina, also a champion curler as a youngster. Started in the early 50s, went through to 1964. It's a shame that he didn't play a little longer because he would have been part of the Riders' first Grey Cup team. He sure deserved it. And everybody just loved what a great gentleman Bill Clark was as well. Again, Canadian Football Hall of Fame.
This is a recording. Okay, I know it's getting tougher here, so next on your list is we're reaching the midway point of the best Saskatchewan-born players to play in the CFL.
Let's go with Scott Flory. Born in Regina, went to Lobolas, played for the U of S Huskies. Contractually, he was a member of the Rough Riders briefly, but never played for them, of course. Was with the Montreal Alouettes. Tremendous offensive lineman. Now in the Hall of Fame and coaching the Huskies.
Yeah, absolutely. We're just in here with the Rams and the Huskies in their big rivalry game here in Regina. Okay, next on your list, I see a few offensive linemen on this list. Who do you got next? Would it be an offensive lineman?
Let's go with Jason Claremont.
Yeah, okay, that's a good one.
You know, there's so many of these players are linemen. It's tough to You're talking about linemen who've had decorated careers, and not to disparage linemen at all, but it's easy to fall into that pattern of just picking alignments, as so many great ones have come from Saskatchewan. Jason Claremont, an exception, finished his career with the Riders. Of course, he started with the BC Lions, was a 1,000-yard receiver with them, named the top Canadian in the Canadian Football League, didn't name the top rookie. Just an amazing player, and not in the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. That should be addressed. I think he richly deserves to be inducted.
Yeah, that's not a bad point at all. Grey Cup champion, outstanding rookie, outstanding Canadian in a Grey Cup game for sure, and very heavily involved back in our community. Okay, the names Makowski, Atchison, Aldag, James, those kind of guys haven't been mentioned yet. Who are you going with next?
There you have the top four. Mm-hmm. And it's almost... you know, pick a puppy out of a litter type of thing. They're all so you want to take all of them home because they're just such great names. I don't know how you differentiate, but I guess that's the job today.
So let's do it this way.
I'll go with Roger Aldag.
Okay. Go ahead. Sorry. Yeah. Go ahead.
I'll go with Roger Aldag. I think born in Gull Lake, iconic Rough Rider, and. Twice named the outstanding offensive lineman in the Canadian Football League. So,
yeah,
Roger Aldag could easily be number one. This last four was just tough to pick terms of order.
Yeah, and I don't like to, and because of that, and I was cutting you off there, because of that, I was going to go with this approach. So you didn't really have to go one through four because, you know, the debate is who's a better lineman? Was it Aldag or was it Gene Makowski? And that's such a tough choice, man. I watched both those guys play. So you mentioned Aldag. So instead of maybe ranking these last few guys, I'll just throw the name out there and you tell me what you think about them. Gene Makowski.
A lot of the things that you say about Gene Makowski can be said about Roger Aldag because their careers are so similar. You know, born in Saskatchewan, didn't join the Rough Riders with a lot of fanfare, but certainly retired with that. Just amazing players and just such gentlemen. Twice the most outstanding offensive lineman in the league, the runner-up as well, one year.
All right. And how about Ron Atchison? What do you know, your thoughts on him and his career?
Well, he was so amazing that when he retired, they named a lake after him. If they name a lake after you, you've got to be high up on the list.
Yeah.
Walked onto the Riders, played for the Hilltops, walked onto the Riders in 1952, kept playing until 1968, and probably would have played until 1998 if they'd let him.
Hey, by the way, speaking of naming things, Rob Banstone, is that street up in Hawkstone in Northwest Regina, Vanstone Street or Vanstone Way? Is that after you?
It's after my dad.
After your dad,
Vanstone.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That is.
Yeah, I've only driven down it about 3,000 times There's nothing there but a sidewalk, but Alan Vanstone was my father, and it was named after him.
That's got to be a, you know, I could see why you drove down it 3,000 times. Like, what does that do to your heartstrings when you drive down that street? And have you taken a picture, I hope so, by the sign?
It's actually on my Twitter account. The sign is my Twitter picture.
Yeah.
Yep. And I'm pretty proud of that. There's three signs and virtually nothing else, but any one of the signs is pretty near and dear to my heart.
That's awesome, man. Well, you've carried on that name well. And, of course, we can't wrap this up without talking about Jerry James. When I throw out the name Jerry James, what do you think?
Kid Dynamite. And his father, Eddie Dynamite James, is in the Canadian Football Hall of Fame as well. He played for the Rough Riders, not for an extended period, but Eddie Dynamite James is a tremendous player. Jerry James, just people remember him as a hockey coach in the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League. They remember him playing for the Toronto Maple Leafs, but as a running back and as a kicker, Jerry James was an absolute dynamo for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Finished his career with the Rough Riders in 1964, but the bulk of his playing career was spent with Winnipeg, and he was just unstoppable as a running back. He could catch the ball. Scored tons of touchdowns, just as dynamic as they get. And again, Jerry James is certainly in the top echelon. I don't even know how you pick between them when you get that
high.
Well,
I tell you what, just the way you talked about him there, he could very well make a case for the best all-around Saskatchewan athlete that was ever born.
Well, if you look at it, within the same calendar year, Jerry James played for a Grey Cup champion and played for a Stanley Cup champion. That will never be done again. I guarantee you that.
Yeah, we're talking about Deion Sanders hitting a homer and scoring a touchdown in the same week. This guy in the same calendar year won a Stanley Cup and a Grey Cup, and you're absolutely right. That is outstanding, Rob. That's why I like having you on the show. Just to wrap up, because you've covered high school football, lots of different athletics. What's it mean to you to cover? Because I talked to you the other day when we were watching NFL football together. You said your favorite thing to cover is high school athletics. Why is that?
Just the volume of stories, for one. You look at the amount of high school athletes who are playing sports, and you're talking thousands. So if you can, there's a lot of possible stories there. Sometimes the tough one is figuring out which one to do. And they're all fresh stories once you get to them. People are happy to talk. They're good news stories. They're fun stories. They're stories about their love of the game type of stories. They're not getting paid a cent. They certainly have aspirations. A young man named Ethan Ball with the Riffle Royals is one of them. Mm. But those are the fun stories to do, by and large. And I've always got a real soft spot for covering high school sports. I started out covering it. I went on, of course, to cover a lot of things that are more prominent. And after I did that, for a number of years, I actually started covering high school sports more because I missed it and I realized how much I loved it.
Well, you gave Ethan a shout out. I'm going to tell you this. Him and I were driving in that area, and this is something that is probably you should look at as a compliment, because you look at your dad in high regard and how you drive by the sign 3,000 times, like you said. But my son said, Is that the great Rob Vanstone sign? Is that it? And I said, well, I'll have to ask him, but it's your dad. But you know what? That should be a compliment, because now the new generation, the new millennials, they're like, no, they see that as Rob Vanstone Street or whatever. So that's kind of a compliment. I think you should take it that way anyway.
Well, thanks, Ballsy. A few people have asked me that question, and I always, I think it gives me even greater pride to correct them and to say that it's named after Alan Vanstone. So I'm pretty, very proud. I'm as proud of that of anything that I can name.
Well, we're happy to have you on the show, Rob. Thanks for this, and thanks for compiling that great list, and just takes us down memory lane and show us that Saskatchewan has always been the center of football in the Canadian Football League going way back, and many more athletes on the horizon to come, hopefully. Thanks for this, Rob.
Oh, thanks so much, Ballsy. I wish it had been a top 20, because there's so many candidates for number 11.
You know, just off the top of my head, Bob Poley, Neil Hughes. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Dan Farthing.
Dan Farthing. We could talk for weeks. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for this, Rob.
Thanks, Ballsy. Take care.
Welcome back to Harvard Studio 620 here. Ballsy along with Wes Cate signing autographs and taking pictures, signing
Pepsi Cups, Cups. Yeah, man. Yeah, awesome, man. Must be great to be a Plaza of Honor guy. I'm just a broken down DJ. Ready to get to the phone lines in a second and hook up with Jason Claremont. Wanted to thank Richard Strubel for listening. He won the $25 gift card to KFC. He lives out in Crane Valley. Let's head out on the Mr. Lube hotline now and speak with Jason Claremont. How are you today, JC?
I'm good, Ballsy. How's Kate doing?
Yeah, JC, what's happening, man? Good to hear from you.
Hey, take us inside the mind, if you can, of without actually being the guy. Mitch Pickton making his first start as a Saskatchewan Rough Rider on his home turf. Grew up playing minor football here, played with the Rams.
It's about time, if that's what he's thinking about right now. It's about time I got my shot here. Can't wait to get on the field, champing it a bit.
How excited are you to see him play and see what he can do on the field?
I am. I'm biased. I really like the way he plays the game, and I can't wait to see him play. Obviously, I'm a Ram guy, and it's a great opportunity. I mean, people might lose sight of the fact that, you know, we've already got Lennius in there, and, you know, he's a local guy too. It's going to be a really good game for receivers as far as auditions are concerned, because there's all the import receivers are going to be trying to keep their spot now that Jordan Williams-Lambert's back too.
Yeah, I think bring that up. Who do you think might be sacrificed, for lack of a better word, when Jordan Williams-Lambert comes on the roster?
I don't know what that locker room is like. I know that the production of Manny Arsenault hasn't been huge, but you can't really take Roosevelt off the field. Moore is kind of a threat that he can, you know, also return kicks and those types of things. So I think it's going to be tough, and I don't know what that locker room is like, so I'm not 100% sure whether they need that leadership of Manny or not. But I feel like it's going to be a dogfight between Moore and Arsenault this game.
Yeah, you were talking last week going into that Banjo Bowl that it's never easy to win. The Riders didn't show up. Should we be concerned from your standpoint on how the Riders played last week?
No, sometimes a loss after a string of wins is a good thing because it resets everything. Winning hides a lot of warts, and so you don't really talk about all the bad things in your film session, or when you do, it doesn't really hit home because it didn't really have an impact on the game. But when you have a game where it's one-sided, and you're able to go through the film and reset and, you know, take yourself back to the things that you need to do to improve, you're going to be a scary team the next week.
What are you liking from what you see of this Montreal team, which is playing good football under Kahari Jones? They've won three in a row on the road and three in a row just in general. Last time they lost was the game, Lightning shortened game against the Riders August 9th.
Yeah, so there's less game film for them to watch in that game, and I feel like this game will go all four quarters. That's a good Montreal team. It's a tough travel schedule to come to Saskatchewan and play in front of our fans. And I feel like if we can get out to a good start, which has been the way it's been going at home. I mean, the last two home games, I think we've had interceptions in the first two series. And if that defense comes out firing, the crowd will get into it, and Montreal's going to be in trouble.
Hey, Jason, I went a little long with Jeff Fairholm, so we're going to have to cut you short here. But just quickly, a thought from you on that 89 Grey Cup team. I don't know. I can't remember if you'd be old enough to really even pay attention to that team, but you know enough about it if you're a Rider fan.
Hey, I was 11. That was the first Grey Cup party I went to. It was so much fun. I must have drank like 2 liters of Orange Crush. I had a blast. We all went down Albert Street. It was awesome. I think everybody got the same white sweater with the score on it after Dave Ridgeway made that kick. That was just an amazing team.
Yeah, we got a lot of guys walking around with their real men eat wheat sweaters. I had that sweatshirt with all the list of the entire roster. I don't have it on me, but yeah, that was a great time. Hey, thanks for this, JC. If they want to hook up with you in the real estate game, where do they find you?
JCRealty.com, or just give me a call, 581-8982.
Awesome, buddy. Thanks. Take care, okay?
Okay.
And we had the top players picked by Rob Vanstone and Saskatchewan-born players. He made Vanstone's list, but other guys we didn't talk about. Roger Reinson, former Regina Ram, 4 Grey Cup champions, is a long snapper linebacker. John Ryan, of course. Brennan Labatt, Neil Hughes, who went to the Plaza of Honor. So many great Saskatchewan-born CFLers. When we come back, we'll talk to a great CFLer in his own right, Wes Cates, to wrap the show up. This is Countdown to Kickoff on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. We'll be right back. And it's Ballsy back here with Wes Cates at Harvard Studio 620, getting set for the Riders and the Montreal Alouettes. We had Claremont on. I didn't let you get a story in on Claremont. What's your thoughts on him?
Claremont was one of my practice buddies, man. We didn't hang out a lot off the field, but on the field we did lots. And he was a funny guy, one of the funniest guys I ever hung out with. And the travesty, I swear, that when the Riders brought that hometown kid home, he didn't become like the third option or a big a part of our offense. He did, still made some big catches, but I always was mad that he never got more balls like when he was here. And I used to always, anytime he made a play against the first team D, I'd always be yelling from the, you know what I mean? I was just like, Claremont, get him, get him. But
you know, you're an American that came here, and probably, I don't want to say you, but in general, Americans disrespect Canadians. They can't be that good. He was the guy that, well, a lot of guys do. They think, I mean, come on. But as a Canadian, he's the guy that didn't need a birth certificate to protect his job.
No, for sure. No, he was a big guy. I remember he was actually a gunner with my rookie year with Calgary, and he was one of the hardest guys to keep off the returner, man. He was just a big – he was fast for his size. He was tricky. He was a smart athlete, and he was just a tough cover, man. And I never really seen him get covered by any DBs or anything like that. And I think he was just a big, strong, smart receiver that obviously was a great in the CFL for a reason.
All right, we're going to go to our extra point now. Hey Wes, early on in the season we had some pop in our return game. We haven't lately had any pop, and Father Time catches up to everybody. I mean, maybe Figgy hasn't got the look that he needs to break it again, but I want to get your thoughts. You have a great Fig Pen story. Tell us that Fig Pen story.
Well, Purifoy is one of my favorite players right now, and he usually makes big plays when you give him a chance.
But it's tough to be a DB and a returner.
Yeah, for sure. But Figgy, he's a great athlete, and I think the way he takes care of his body, you know, he eats right, he's vegan, all that good stuff. He's just as fast now as he ever was, I think. And I remember me and Ken Miller, back when Fig Pen was a rookie, we're standing at the 20 because, you know, I was too good to play special teams back then. So we're standing at the 20 watching kick return and Fig Pen's returning kicks. And I'm like, you know what, coach, man, this guy is like might be the fastest guy on our team, like Dressler, maybe a DB. He's like, you think? He's like, I don't know. I haven't seen it. I'm like, yeah, he plays a cool. He's a glider.
Yeah.
He doesn't necessarily break out in his full speed, but trust me, this guy's fast. He's like, I don't know. I don't see it. I don't know if we're going to keep him. I don't see it. Then, like, you know, me being selfish, I'm like, okay, well, I'm not worried about him taking my spot because he did get released.
Hey, I tried.
Hamilton picked him up, and then he scores five different ways in 6 weeks, goes to the NFL and has a great career, comes back here, and he's still playing.
Yeah.
So, you know, nothing to, not to take anything away from Coach Miller. I think he was a great judge of talent, but, you know, you guess wrong sometimes.
Yeah. Hey, the business side of football is interesting. Jordan Williams-Lambert, his shadow's hovering here, so – what are you looking for from the import receivers and maybe looking over their shoulder?
Yeah, I think you got to just go out and know that this is a guy that was doing some big things for the Riders. He's obviously a specimen. He's a good physical receiver, so you can't really worry about it. You just got to go out there and make the plays to make sure you carve out a spot and understand that this guy is probably going to get some time too. If you show a little attitude and then you go out there and drop some balls or mess up on some assignments, then you're probably going to be the first cut guy going. So you better act like a team player and go out there and do your best to make an impact on the game.
Finish the sentence for me here, 45 seconds or less. The Saskatchewan Rough Riders will win if?
The Rough Riders will win if they come out ready to play. I think they came out like really flat last week. I think it's all about how you start the game off. I think they've got the talent. If Fajardo takes it serious from snap one and really works on getting the ball out quick and deciphering the defenses and getting his offense going, leaning on Willie P so that the offensive line can fire off the ball. We know the defense is going to make plays. Hopefully they don't give up any big ones. But I think the Riders' biggest thing, they've got the talent. Hopefully they worked on some of the fundamentals, and they come out just ready to go, and I think they'll have good success.
We had a great time with Wes Cates. What a joy to work with, and we'll have him back again for sure. You can catch him with X's and O's on CTV with Clara Hanna on his weekly segment. Coming up, we'll go to the broadcast booth and speak with Derek Taylor and Luke Mulder after the game. Chris Best and I will take your calls on the Sports Cage Radio Roundtable. You've been listening to Countdown to Kickoff for KFC and Waxy's Bobcat, our hotline sponsor, Mr. Lube, on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network.